Okay, 1054.
Amend contract with Motivate International, Inc. to increase to $11,380,000 for planning, acquiring, and operating bike share system.
Commissioner Novick.
Colleagues, this is kind of a ministerial thing, but allows us to give an update on the Bike Town system. This increases the contract value for the system, allowing PBOT to pay Motivate for the day-to-day operation of the enhanced system. Other than increasing the contract value, the ordinance makes no change to the contract approved by City Council in December 2015. I'm going to turn it over first to Margie Bradway and Steve Hoyt McBeth to go over the ordinance, and then I'd like to, with your indulgence, have a short presentation from Dorothy Mitchell from Motivate, the operator of Bike Town, regarding the first 2 months of Bike Town's operation.
Morning.
Good morning. Hi, my name is Margie Bradway. I'm the Active Transportation and Safety Division Manager. I think it's relevant that there was just a presentation on smart cities and behavioral change, because I think that's exactly what we've seen with Bike Town. But before we get into kind of an update on the operations of Bike Town, I want to speak to the action that you're taking today. So on December 23rd, 2015, this body approved the contract that we currently have with Motivate, which Dorothy is the general manager for the Portland office. We came back to you on June 1st, 2016 and asked for an amendment to our procurement authority, $3.75 million, and that was for the purchase of the capital. Today we're coming back to you again asking for procurement authority that has to do with the operations of the bikes. So we're asking for an increase of contract value of $7.63 million, which covers the day-to-day operations as well as work on the bike wraps themselves. And if you have questions on what the day-to-day operations cost, I'm happy to answer that, or Dorothy can speak to that. For clarity, I just want to make sure that this it's on the record that all of this money is paid by sponsorship and revenue user fees. There are no city dollars used, and the increased contract value covers the three-year term of the Motivate contract. Any questions on that item?
I just have a question. Obviously, it's been very successful. Does Motivate get all the revenue, or is there any revenue sharing with the city if it turns out it's more profitable than we thought it would be?
When how the contract works is that when full cost recovery happens after a full year, there is a 40-60 revenue split, but it will take at least 2, if not 3 years to start getting into that revenue split after the launch, which is typical for most bike share systems. Thank you for asking.
Morning.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you, Margie. My name is Steve Hoyt McBeth with the Portland Bureau of Transportation. I'm the Bike Town project manager. So it was just about, just a little over 2 months ago that Mayor Hales, Transportation Commissioner Novick, Commissioner Fish joined with leaders from Nike, from institutional leaders and businesses and everyday Portlanders to celebrate the launch of Bike Town. So myself and Dorothy Mitchell from Motivate wanted to just give a quick presentation to show you where we've been, and we're really happy with the success that we've seen so far. So as you may know, this Bike Town is composed of 1,000 bikes, 100 stations in just about a 9-square-mile area. We launched on July 19th of this year. So far, the response that we've had from Portlanders and visitors has been very enthusiastic. We've had over 100,000 trips in that 2 months of operation. 236,000 miles ridden on Bike Town bikes. And I know that Commissioner Novick, when he became the transportation commissioner, mentioned healthcare and active transportation in the same breath. And I think this is well worth noting. That's 85 times across the United States is how much.
By the way, I can't fault you for highlighting the First Lady in this picture. But I would like to just comment that if you look just in the background with the little sneaker behind her, mm-hmm. that's Commissioner Nick Fish, fully obscured.
Commissioner Fish.
Upstaged you.
Yeah. Stay tuned, Commissioner.
Stay tuned, Commissioner.
I understand how the charter is written, so I don't
yes,
have
yes.
No quarrel with that picture.
It doesn't have anything to do with who's more photogenic, does it?
Thank you.
oh my God.
I would like to speak to membership sales. This is, along with the Nike sponsorship, the membership revenue is kind of the backbone of our of our business plan. We've had over 2,600 Portlanders make a 12-month and annual commitment to Biketown. That's 260,000 folks. It took Seattle 8.5 months to get to that number, so we're really proud with how quickly we've had an embrace by Portlanders to make that large commitment. Our single ride users, just about 20,000, so you may recall from our September 2015 proposal presentation, this is a $2.50 ticket for a 30-minute ride. This is one of the lowest in the country, and we're really excited to see how this is bringing new Portlanders to biking, which is really one of the main goals. And then about 9,000 day passes, which is composed, we see, of both visitors and other folks. So this is my last slide, then I'm going to turn it over to Dorothy Mitchell with Motivate. This is a scatter map showing all of the annual members. So these are the folks that have made the largest commitment to Biketown. They're paying $12 a month over a year process. And you can see that we have a lot of members who live within the service area, but also a lot of members who live outside of the service area and, frankly, in the region as well. And I think this just indicates, you know, the core centrality of the central city to the region. It was why we wanted to start this program in the downtown and the close neighborhoods, because we knew with financial sustainability being a kind of a bedrock of our business plan, that we knew that we would be drawing people not only who live in the service area, but also work in the service area. So that's been very exciting. And so with that, I'm going to do a tag team, unless you have questions at this point.
Question.
Yes, Commissioner.
And it's prompted by this slide. So every year we have the option of signing up for a transit pass. And so
yes, sir.
I get it in the mail every month, and it's automatically charged to my paycheck. Would you remind me, do employees of the city have the same option for this service, where it can be sort of annually can sign up and have automatic deductions?
Thank you for the question. So right now we have, you know, as city employees, we have three benefits. You can either choose a carpool benefit, a transit benefit, or bike and walk bucks, which is essentially a cash that's added to your income for making a commitment to walk or bike 80% of the year. Right now there's not a separate option for the Biketown membership. I think that's something that we'll be looking at in the next year. The gross income that you receive annually for the bike and walk bucks is similar to the cost of an annual membership, so someone could make that choice to use that.
Well, what I would say, Steve, is, I mean, I just appreciate the convenience of the one-stop shopping and then getting my pass every month. I think a lot of us would appreciate the convenience of being able to check another box, and whether it's pre- or post-tax dollars would be of no consequence to me. It would just be the convenience factor.
And behavioral economics has demonstrated that convenience can lead to changes in behavior. So,
No, I love that. I love that suggestion. You know, the things that are automatic, we tend to keep doing, you know, and sometimes to our detriment. You know, if you stop getting Netflix pictures in the mail, movies in the mail, you nevertheless still get the bill every month. So, you know, if you don't have time to watch movies and you pay $8 a month or whatever it is, you just leave that on autopilot. Well, let's leave something that's actually useful and helpful on autopilot in this case.
You know, the most egregious that I found, Mayor, on that recently is the credit score companies who target folks. And the way they're structured is they'll give you a free credit score, but in the process you are signing up for the annual service, which you can cancel after 1 week. But I'm guessing that they have found that a lot of people don't follow through and cancel, and so it becomes a recurring charge for something they absolutely don't need.
In this case, if we could both make it the easy option on the checkoff and then obviously promote it to people, because
pre or post tax dollars, I don't care.
That's great.
Well, that's great. I'd love to take that. I'll take that back to the folks.
Employers like Portland State and so on could do the same.
Yeah, in fact, I think this would be a great opportunity unless council has other questions for me to hand it off to Dorothy, and she can actually talk about the group / employer program that Motivate is already instituted.
Great. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Dorothy Mitchell. I'm the general manager of Biketown, so I work for Motivate. We've just got a couple more slides we can take you through, and then happy to answer questions. Wanted to call out something that we've been exceedingly pleased with Biketown thus far, and that is the way that we've seen it bringing people of a lot of diverse backgrounds and people that haven't traditionally been bike riders in Portland, kind of onto bikes in Portland. So people of color, women, We also have Trailblazer basketball players posting about their Bike Town rides. So it's really capturing kind of an interest in a cross-section that is somewhat new to biking in Portland. That's reflected in just a kind of a snapshot of scenes from our Instagram, people tagging Bike Town in their Instagram posts. And, you know, personally seeing groups of women riding bikes in Portland, seeing groups of women of color, really kind of validates one of the things that we were hoping would happen with Bike Town, which is getting a new group of people, you know, interested but concerned bike riders into the fold. So it's been great to kind of see that evidence, at least anecdotally, especially through social media. And this has kind of come up throughout the session this morning, but there was, you know, some really great buzz about how behavior change can be possible through, you know, through programs like this and some of the success that we've had. Just because of some of the facets of what Bike Town is and how it's kind of easy to use and easy to see and join. That's been great. One other point that I'll bring up is that, you know, as we're seeing more and more diverse group of people riding bikes, we've also really been focused on bringing diversity into our internal operations. And I'm sure you're familiar with the high road standards that were part of the contract between PBOT and Motivate around our hiring goals. I'm really pleased to say that we've been overwhelmingly successful with meeting and exceeding those standards. You can kind of see from the statistics that we've gone far above kind of the minimum requirements for hiring folks from diverse backgrounds, whether they were formerly incarcerated, veterans, women, people of color. And it honestly has been actually a tremendously successful part of our operations and, you know, have been extremely pleased with the group that we've had for our positions, and really came together to make a launch happen in just a kind of a, you know, boots on the ground, getting things done kind of way. So very pleased to report on the success of that. So happy to take any other questions.
I'm very glad that this has been so successful. Congratulations to everybody. My guests from England used the bikes, and I brought down helmets for them. My son is a monthly member, and he always wears his helmet too. On the photograph that you showed, it was sort of lots of people being really happy riding the bikes. I saw maybe 3 helmets out of about 30 people. And there was an article on the front page of the Tribune about the woman who got a concussion from falling off the bike. And so, and that said, that there are other cities that have made the helmet rental work. So I also learned from my son that the sign up says that the person is waiving all the rights to sue if there's a problem, but that there's a way to send in, and my son being very detail oriented like me, sent in his message saying, no, I don't waive my rights to sue. So I think for the humanity and the care, we do have a lot of people, and it's only going to take one really bad crash that, even though the bikes are not going very fast, the traffic around them is, and that in the situation where somebody was hurt, and then it's going to be a real big problem. So what are you doing about helmets?
You want to take this one?
Sure. Thank you very much, Commissioner, for the comments and the question. So I would say that we have an existing helmet strategy, and then kind of where we want to grow that strategy to over the longer term. So we make a real strong effort to encourage helmet use. There's been a lot of social media pushing that Motivate, i.e. Bike Town, has done through the event. Anyone who comes through our Bike Town for All program, which is an equity program, is given a free helmet that's been donated by the Portland Fire Bureau in a partnership with PBOT. Anybody who becomes an annual member has been sent a promotion for a discounted helmet to use Bike Town. And then we've worked with the bike rental companies that tend to be in visitor, kind of like are densely located in the visitor areas where someone is less likely, perhaps like your son, who has kind of normalized the behavior and he knows to either have an additional helmet at work or he just knows he's just, you know, more planned to bring your helmet. Because that's the trickiest part for us, is these kind of spontaneous trips that are a little bit more heavily toward the visitor population. So I think that longer term, what we'd like to see is we're looking through opportunities for helmet sponsors to kind of help us look at more aggressive ways to address the issue, whether that we could, you know, one manifestation of that could be an actual structure at a station, or it could be some sort of delivery service. There's a lot of different ideas out there. I mean, I think that one of the challenges that we face is we had very clear direction from back in 2011 from City Council that we needed to bring something forward to Council that was financially sustainable and that, really protected the city's interests financially. And so I think that one of the challenges for us is that the one kind of helmet vending solution that we have in the U.S. and Seattle, where King County has a mandatory helmet law, is fairly expensive to engage in. And so when we overlay a kind of no risk to the city sort of piece to it, that it's one of the challenges that we face in kind of manifesting that.
That very ordinance in 2011 yeah. directed you to look into a helmet thing, and I know you have.
Yes.
But your own photographs show that most of the people are not wearing helmets. And furthermore, it was also promised that we would be able to track individual bikes so that mm-hmm. information could be sent to people who are riding on the sidewalks. Mm-hmm. And that is not done, because I asked for somebody to send a nice note to the couple mm-hmm. that I saw riding on the sidewalks downtown at the exact time, and I was told that that's not going to happen. So the social media of encouraging people to wear mm-hmm. helmets and not to ride on the sidewalk is not working.
Mm-hmm. And I'll speak to this. I think, again, helmet is a behavior change issue. I just traveled to Vancouver for an international conference, and they also have a helmet law there, and they also launched a bike share system the same time we did. They struggled with a helmet solution. The best they could do was to kind of tie up helmets with the bikes for free. One, they did see a lot of helmets stolen, and you could see them also being left on the ground near the stations. But two, the more interesting thing for me was that about one-third of all riders weren't wearing helmets. So there, I kind of asked my peers that work for the city of Vancouver, I said, well, what's going on? There's a helmet law, but about one-third of your riders in the entire city. And they said that there has been a resistance to wear helmets, and the police have really stopped enforcing it. So it was very interesting to me that a legal requirement structure doesn't in itself provide that security. And so whether it's, I don't know if just like many problems in our city, trying to figure out what type of encouragement versus enforcement and how do you approach that. But I think we've tried several creative ways. Steve also didn't mention that we have a partnership with Nutcase Helmet that gives you discounted helmets, and we have been promoting that in the places that we can. I think we're going to continue to look for solutions. We're going to continue to do encouragement. I can't, at this point, though, guarantee that we have a solution that's going to get anybody who wants to get on a bike in a helmet or on a bike town bike.
Well, it's particularly of concern for tourists, because they're not likely to go buy a helmet just to use for a week mm-hmm. while they're here. So maybe we should look at targeting the tourists. Are there places like Travel Portland that could have them available, or mm-hmm. the Rose Foundation?
Yeah.
There's a lot of areas near the stations that, you presumably you know from the rental which are the spots that tourists are particularly getting their bikes to and from, and see if we can tailor the solution just to that. Because mm-hmm. if it's somebody who lives in Portland, then yes, that they are accepting the risk if they don't bring their helmet with them. But for somebody who lives outside and we want them to come and use our bikes, my friends had an absolutely fantastic time. They couldn't stop talking about it. We want people to do that. We don't want mm-hmm. to then sue because we get into trouble.
Here, I have a comment and a question. First, a comment. When I look back on my 8 years on this body, I don't usually reflect on the things that were easy to do. I remember the things that were really hard. And just as an example, when I had the honor of being the housing commissioner, we were charged with building an affordable housing development in South Waterfront. And then Director Van Vliet was charged with putting the project together. And it seemed like every week we got slammed with something that made it almost impossible to do the project. The economy tanked, the worst recession in our lifetime. Tax credit market tanked. All kinds of challenges. And it really felt like some horror movie where we're dealing with just every conceivable, you know, systems failure, macro and micro. And Margaret looked at 10 different models for how to make it work, the city owning the property through City Lights, different models of financing. And ultimately, she put the deal together, and we built what's called Gray's Landing. And so every time I go by there, I'm reminded of what an amazing accomplishment that was, because it was so hard. And I remember those projects more than the ones that kind of came together like magic. And I just want to comment that I know how hard this was over time to pull this together. And I live now in the Goose Hollow neighborhood, and it's just extraordinary how dynamic this program is in Northwest and Southwest Portland. The stations, the people on the bikes, the amount of activity. So congratulations, because I know this was a very long and hard road to get here. But it's one of the really great things that we've unveiled in the city in the last few years. My question to you, though, is just curious, comparing us to other peer cities, what has surprised you about the rollout, or what have been some differences between our experience and peer cities in the early stages of the rollout?
One of the ones has been we chose to go with a newer technology, the smart bike technology that had the locking system right on the bikes, Commissioner. And one of my concerns was we knew we were buying a lot more flexibility for the user and a more sustainable way to operate the system. But I was a little concerned about how that first time friction of unlocking the bike, there's a little bit more to do than there is with the systems in New York or DC or Boston. So I was very happy to see that those concerns of mine were not brought to fruition. I've sat and watched at stations that have a lot of first time users, and we've seen that work really well. I think that looking at some other cities, I anticipated seeing spikes more in the morning commutes. If you look at, like, for example, Washington, D.C., you see spikes in the morning and the afternoon commutes. Ours are mostly in the afternoon commutes, and we're seeing a lot more kind of first-time riders who are doing it for recreation. And at first, I thought that was a bad thing. And then I thought about it a little bit more. And, you know, we're kind of sometimes faced with the challenges of our success. So bike share in a lot of cities didn't have 10 to 15 years before it where the city invested heavily in infrastructure, invested heavily in marketing to people. And so there was a lot of latent demand in these markets. When you bring bike share in, these people who haven't given a lot of thought to it are just ready to go, these early adopters. And what we're seeing here is that because we've really tapped that market, you know, we have the number one bike commute rate in the entire country. The closest city to us is 2% below us. And that means that that's a lot of the good work that we've done to get more people to consider biking as part of their transportation network. But it means that those trips that these new people that we're bringing to biking are doing are less likely to be that commute trip and more likely to be the kind of trip that you would take perhaps after hours or on the weekends when you're just trying to get comfortable with trying something new. So I think that was kind of a surprise to me that I've learned from, and I'm hoping that when we come back in the future, we'll see some of those people actually moving to integrating it into kind of their day-to-day transportation behavior.
I guess the other question just is, how are the bikes holding up? And I mean, they are in a very visible public realm, so do you have challenges with things like vandalism or theft?
Yeah, thank you for the question. Thus far, I mean, they're very sturdy, robust bikes. They're doing really well out there. We definitely have had, you know, some instances of just kind of typical urban vandalism, you know, some graffiti and things like that on the stations. Occasionally, bike tires get slashed. We're able to deal with that, you know, quite quickly because of one of the smart bike features in which people can actually, on the bike itself, report if there's a mechanical issue. We're able to really quickly know, you know, what's wrong with every bike in our fleet and, you know, send our employees out on bikes to go fix them in the field. So, you know, I think we haven't been overwhelmed by kind of the amount of, you know, mechanical work we've had to do. I would say it's definitely slowing down a little bit. I think the bikes are doing great, and what we've been seeing is, you know, pretty typical issues.
The other day I went for a ride, and the back tire on my bike seemed flat, so I stopped at the Chevron on Burnside and, like, 21st. It said $1.50 to use the air machine, so you had to put all those quarters in. So I went to go get a change to put it. I thought $1.50 was a little steep for this little tire. And the woman didn't flinch when I gave her the money. She said, oh, no, bikes are free at our gas stations. And she just pushed a button. And by the way, Steve, I would think we might want to talk to some of our our partner, you know, the other folks, and get that word out, because it is sort of a barrier. $1.50 is a lot of money, you know, and it'd probably be cheaper if I just bought a bike pump. But I thought it was very public spirited.
That's cool.
That they, and they just, she hit a button and it was free. And I hope I haven't violated any ethics laws, but I mean, I didn't introduce myself. I just said, you have a bike, so you get free air.
That's cool. Good. That's great. Other questions for the team? Well, I'll just add a little commentary here. I think both on the helmet front and on the access front, I think you're going to continue to get pressure from us to, as this succeeds and exceeds expectations, great. You know, the pressure should be on to both be true to our Vision Zero goal and be creative about trying to solve the helmet problem, as I know you are. And two, that who has access to this system and how fast can we expand it to areas that aren't yet in the service territory, a topic we talked about quite a bit when this was launched, I think are both important community concerns for us to keep going on. And again, I would urge you to be creative about the helmet issue. You know, maybe there can be a nearby vendor at some of the stops that's willing to cooperate in the availability of at least discounted helmets for sale, if not rentals. I'm thinking about the fact that we've got one right out here and right out across the street from the Portland building, and we have vendors that are under contract to the city, like the coffee shop downstairs, that could stock some helmets under their agreement with their landlord that happens to be the same city of Portland. We have community centers and other facilities nearby some of these locations. So maybe we wouldn't get 100% coverage, but maybe you'd get a decent percentage of coverage of a cooperating vendor, whether they were in the helmet business or in some other business, but might have a little shelf space. Hotel concierges seem to be a natural ally in this. I know that was the case with the streetcar, that after not very long, the hotel concierges started having passes in their bag of tricks at the concierge stand, and they knew exactly where the streetcar stop was, and they, oh, you want to go to the Pearl District? Here you go. And so enlisting them as allies as well. I know when you stay in a hotel and you forget your umbrella or your phone charger, you've got a pretty good chance of getting one at the front desk. So again, those kinds of non-regulatory solutions for now. I understand the issues with a regulatory solution, but we are a Vision Zero city. You're committed to it. Director Treat's committed to it. So any way we can try to move that forward, again, understanding that it's got to be practical and not burdensome financially to what is a success story. And then, again, likewise with the service territory area, we're serving part of the city with this. We've got folks on your map, obviously, who live outside the service territory who are participating. Let's keep trying to make it more convenient for more people as we go along. But well done. It's really, really wonderful success. And the orange color is brilliant because it's obvious to see, you know, how well this is working because they're so easy to spot.
Mayor, since we're talking about behavioral science today, I did want to mention that there's kind of a vigorous discussion about what the role of helmets and helmet promotion or requirement should be when it comes to bicycling. There's a New York Times article a while back that said, the safest biking cities are places like Amsterdam and Copenhagen, where middle-aged commuters are mainstay riders and the fraction of adults in helmets is minuscule. Bicycling advocates say that a problem with pushing helmets is that helmets make a basically safe activity seem really dangerous. Quote, the real benefits of bike sharing in terms of health, transport, and emissions derive from getting ordinary people to use it, said Sari Woolsgrove, safety officer at the European Cyclist Federation. And if you say this is wonderful, but you have to wear armor, they won't. These are normal human beings, not urban warriors. That is a perspective that's out there. Now, of course, the difference is that in Copenhagen and Amsterdam, you have separated, protected bike lanes. So there's less of a danger to bicyclists than there is here, where for the most part, we do not have that.
Yeah, good points. Other questions, comments? Thank you all very much. Anyone want to speak on this item? Oh, we do. Yes, thank you all. Come on up.
I'm Shedrick Wilkins. I think bicycles are these kind of mountain bike bikes where your back is vertical. Are good exercise. I think they're better than jogging. I live near the train station, and actually joggers are more likely to hit me. I had to wear a helmet when I walked to the convenience store because some jogger's going to hit me to the ground. Generally, these bikes swirl around. I mean, people have, maybe if they bicycle in groups for safety, they swirl. They're not really, they're it's you go faster than walking, and so you're just like some guy's not catching up, so you swirl around. These aren't speed bikes. I personally do not believe that if you're in a bicycle about the pace of walking, you should not necessarily have to have a helmet unless you're a child. When I was young, I used to bicycle a lot when I was 10 or 15. I never was knocked to the ground on a bicycle. 10 speeds are a real problem. If I was a policeman, somebody's going 30 miles an hour on a 10 speed, stop it. You know, enforce the law. But people without helmets on, I really don't think. And as I remember, I never was ever hit to the ground on a slow mountain bike where you're just using the bicycle to get some exercise. And you're just, instead of walking, you can't walk too far. And again, I've been more likely hit by joggers to the ground and have a head injury when I go to the store, and sometimes I'll go out of the convenience store and some jogger won't stop and almost hits me. I feel more threatened by them than any kind of orange bicycle system. So that's just my comment.
Thank you.
Yes, my name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Watchdog PDX. Now, that helmet issue, as you know, is a concern to me. And one of the things on these type of bikes, I notice you have that basket on there. I've heard some people say they don't have enough storage room on the bikes. I don't know if that could be extended out a little bit more, or even have, like, say, a helmet that could fit down into the basket with, like, a titanium strap that they could keep, pull back immediately, but it's held within a, say, a custom basket. Now, another thing that when I'm hearing on the helmets, I'd like to see Nike, good friends Phil and Travis, to look more at doing more custom helmet work. And what I'm talking about is different. What would be interesting is having some real nice paint designs and custom helmets to where people look at that and say, hey, man, that's cool. It's safe also. I'm wearing that, man. That is cool. I'm going to wear that. And kind of that little bit more of that flashy type incentive to put that helmet on. And also, I'd like a little more feedback from the great Nike designers. I have a brother that started at Nike in 1982, and he's still working there. Normally, he'd be in Indonesia, but that's about 34 years. I think he's one of the dinosaurs at Nike still. But anyway, I think a little bit more from the designer group there on doing more custom bikes, helmets, and getting a little bit more feedback from Nike on that situation, on the safety issue, because I think it's very important. I mean, let's face it, Nike's putting up a tremendous amount of money here, and they should definitely have a lot of input on the safety issues on these bikes. And again, I myself think the color orange is just boring, okay? Sorry to say, people, boring color to me. I'd like to see more maybe input from the public if they could do some customized paint on these bikes, make them a little bit more Portland for the artist-type community, a little more color, get a little bit more feedback from some of the artists. I think that would be good. I don't think orange is necessary to paint your car orange to be seen or to paint it that color, or paint your boat orange so you don't get hit out in the water. So let's get some more ideas on different colors. It's foolish to think that you should just paint something orange and have that as the main color throughout the city. So, and again, just a couple other issues here. Where does Uber and Lyft fit in on this? I'd like to see maybe their concept, their ideas on working with this group on this. Can they help you out and work together? I know it might be considered as maybe pulling some of the income from them, but I don't think it should be. And I, as you know, they are the travel industry experts out in the marketplace and can bring in more people than anyone else, and they've proved that in the last 3 years. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else? Then let's take action, please, on the ordinance.
Novick?
I'm really glad to have this opportunity to congratulate Margie and Dorothy and Steve. Dorothy, that was great to hear that information about the diversity of the Motivates employees. That's fantastic. Steve, once again, congratulations on the successful end to years of effort. And I have to say, in the words of Spiro Agnew, that there were nattering nabobs of negativism about this whole bike share undertaking that have been proven demonstrably wrong. So take that, Nattering Nabobs. This has just been a fantastic success, and I'm glad to have this ministerial opportunity to celebrate it. Aye.
Well, congratulations, Commissioner Novick. And as Commissioner Fish said, it has been a very challenging project, and I really appreciate the staff work and Motivate's partnership, as well as the sponsorship from Nike. And I think, again, what Commissioner Fish was saying and what the mayor said about getting past the difficulty and finding some creative solutions. So I, of the places that I have some influence on, for instance, Pioneer Courthouse Square could have them. It could be a very Portlandy solution that you maybe pay a small amount at your hotel, as you were mentioning, and then you donate it to somebody who, like the Opal students groups working on active transportation. At the end of your stay, we could have them at the airport to drop off and pick up and things. So there are. I know you've been looking at the previous models, and I think you're right, Mayor. Now we have to look for the Portland one. Thank you. Aye.
Steve, and to your team, congratulations on the successful rollout. Having seen this program successfully implemented in other cities around the world, it's just great to have it here. And this is one instance where being number 30 or whatever is
62,
no,
I think.
62 is no shame, because I think we really got it right. And it's a wonderful addition to the menu of options for people in Portland. And when I look at bike share and the opening of the Orange Line and over the last couple of years, I'm filled with pride in areas where we can make a difference and we can get to yes. And the issues that have been raised today, I think reasonable people can sit down and work them out. But this is a great report, and I would ask if I could get an electronic copy of the report, just so I have that. Thank you. Aye.
Hales.
Great work, Steve. Congratulations. This is a big win for the community and for Portland's livability and attractiveness for visitors. So it's really a nice community asset now. People are starting to take it for granted, which is the best sign that you did the right thing. And obviously there's room to grow. There's room to make this program even better. But I just want to commend PBOT, Motivate, Nike, all involved. For really making this a success for everybody. Well done. Aye. Okay.